Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Dan. How you doing this morning?
I'm good, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much for asking. You know, Dan, I'm not sure if you are able to or want to talk about this by any means, but, you know, we're starting to see more of the vaccine rollout happening, and we're starting to see more age brackets coming in. So the 55 and up start on Monday. And a lot of people have been writing into me saying, you know, I don't think we talk enough about the fact that vaccines aren't required. It feels like it's being pushed on us. And I did say to them, listen, that's true. You know, like anything, you are not required to get the COVID vaccine. However, your company does have the right to fire you if they put in their, you know, like in their guidebook or whatever you'd call it. You know, if they say, look, we want everyone to get vaccinated because we can't allow people to work from home, whatever the case may be. You know, they do have the right to do that. And I've had lawyers, attorneys come on and talk about that a little bit. But I wasn't sure, like, what are you hearing from your businesses? Are you starting to see where some of the local businesses in our area are thinking about requiring or mandating vaccines, or like, what is the talk that you're hearing around the town?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not the most well versed on this topic. But, you know, what I've heard from especially the essential businesses is, you know, they are requiring their employees to get the vaccine. And, you know, their number one priority is to keep their staff safe and their customers safe. So, you know, they're following the guidance of CDC and in Connecticut here and the governor. So they're doing what they feel is appropriate for keeping their staff and their customers safe. So and at this point, it seems like the vaccine is outside of the masks and the social distancing is the next best step.
Mm-hmm. So you are hearing about businesses that are requiring it.
Yeah, there's been a few that are definitely having the conversation. They're trying to figure out how this plays into their handbooks, as you suggested before, and make sure that they cover all their bases from a liability perspective. You know, because that's still a story that needs to be told, is, you know, the long-term effects of, you know, people who contracted the vaccine and where they're contracting it, and, you know, was there negligence at all in where they contracted the virus itself?
Sure. Well, I mean, and I look at even just our line of business. If we have a client that comes in and you know, we're not vaccinated, which we haven't had clients come in here since the beginning of the pandemic, but if they are, it then puts every single person at this entire establishment at risk. So we haven't been told we have to get it yet, which I'm a little surprised about. But I also know that, you know, half of our staff here, at least, they can work from home, like our sales staff. But like the on-air talent, we haven't been told we have to get it yet. I think it's just been strongly urged. But I wouldn't be surprised if that changes. But I wasn't sure because I know some people have literally said, you know, I will walk from a job. And part of me is like, really? We're kind of living in a time where you can't walk from a job. But I didn't know if you've gotten, you know, both sides of that, you know, people who are not happy with the mandates for certain companies, or if they're kind of like, listen, we want to go back to normal. If it means getting a vaccine, I'm going to do it.
Right. Yeah. And I've heard a little bit of from both sides. I do know that there's businesses that are looking into, again, the legalese around it and, you know, and how they could protect themselves and what would be the consequence if they didn't mandate it. So I think, like I said, I think the story still needs to play itself out and to see how, you know, the guidance continues to instruct these businesses on what's appropriate and what's not.
Dan Onofrio with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council is here this morning. And, you know, Dan, something else that I was curious about, I know that your network has a number of restaurants that you work with. You talk to the owners. Were they kind of taken aback, shocked that they now have to wait for their age bracket to be called to get the vaccine? Because I really was taken aback that essential workers like grocery stores, restaurants, they're basically waiting for their age to be called for them to get the vaccine, whereas it was kind of insinuated before that they would be next in line.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of noise right now about that with the latest announcement of opening up the age brackets. And, you know, a few weeks back, they allowed the essential businesses, especially the frontline employees and all those businesses that have essential workers, to register their business so that they can identify and prioritize, you know, the next set of vaccinations. And unfortunately, they haven't really given the next steps on, okay, well, your business is now qualified. Now you can load up your employees to get the vaccine. And I think the reality of what they're finding is, you know, if they just continue to open things up, eventually they're going to cover everyone instead of trying to prioritize, you know, what businesses should go next and what employees should go next. So I don't know if that's the answer, but I did hear a lot of noise from not just restaurants, but the other essential businesses out there that, you know, want their employees to go through the process or at least have the opportunity. And it's not very clear right now on the best way to do that. So I'm guessing from the government side, from the state side and CDC, is they're saying, well, why don't we just continue to dial up the age brackets, and eventually we're going to tap into all those workers. So it might be a double-edge approach. I did hear that there would be further guidance coming in March around the restaurants and other industries that, you know, are deemed essential. So I think there's still more to that as well.
Because, you know, Dan, and I'm glad to hear that. Maybe that's an update that I didn't realize, that they'll give some regard. I just think, you know, I'm immediately, what's coming to mind for me are certain restaurants that I go to, or even grocery stores that I go to pretty frequently. You know, these guys haven't been able to stop. They can't do their work from home. They are feeding us literally every day. And I think, you know, I look at people who work at grocery stores and restaurants, and you're looking at 25 to 50 year olds who are the majority of the people working at these establishments. Granted, you do have some older demographic that work there, but the majority of the people I'm seeing are not getting their vaccines till April or May. And to me, you've got people who are healthy, even, I've got to be honest, 55 and older, who are healthy, either work from home. Like I was using even the example that my sister-in-law, she's a stay-at-home mom. Love her. God bless her. I think it's great. I wish I could be a stay-at-home mom, but we can't afford it. But she's in the age bracket where she could get the vaccine a month ahead of me. And I'm at work every morning. And I think to myself, why are we going by age when you're requiring certain people to still show up? We can't do our jobs from home. So I think it's interesting. It's a little disheartening, but it's interesting how they decided to do it that way.
Yeah, and again, I think there might be a double-edged approach to this thing. I think we'll hear more about the essential workers and the frontline employees, the people that are exposed to people. I think we'll hear a little bit more about that in the coming weeks. I don't have a lot of detail, but I did get the sense from our calls earlier this week and the noise that we've been hearing that, you know, they're trying to figure out how to prioritize, because it's a big group, right? Mm. If you look at that frontline essential worker category, whether you're talking about a manufacturer or you're talking about the grocery worker, it's a very large population. So I think, you know, there isn't a silver bullet to this thing, and I think they're just trying to do their best to continue to get more people access to the vaccination or the vaccine, and at the same time address the essential worker category that is a very large group.
Mm-hmm. No question. And Dan, I always appreciate getting your insight, especially from the business side of things. Thank you so much for popping on this morning, and we'll talk again next week.
Always a pleasure. Have a great rest of the week, Melissa.
Thank you. You too, Dan. All right, let's head to Milford now, where Mayor Ben Blake is standing by. Good morning, Mayor Blake. How are you?
I'm doing well, Melissa. Good morning.
So actually, Mayor Blake, during the commercial break, I got a call from one of your restaurant owners in Milford, very lovely woman, Patty, who offered some food later on today. So I'll probably go check them out because I had never even heard of them before. But it does kind of prompt my question for you, which is, you know, with the COVID vaccine age-based eligibility, the new COVID rollout plan from the governor, I was curious, have you heard anything from your restaurant owners or anything? Because I know they were expecting to be part of the essential workers who get vaccinated next, and now it's based on their age.
Well, everybody is anxious to get vaccinated so that we're moving back to a new normal sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. And we're pushing forward. We are just so grateful for all the good work and hard work that our restaurants have been doing under these difficult situations. In fact, I am going to be visiting our restaurants today. We have a short promotional video that we're filming later on to highlight all the good work of our restaurateurs. And Milford, we have about 400 restaurants in town, and each one of them has, you know, gone through the logistical gymnastics to make sure that we're continuing to offer great food and making sure that the protocols are followed.
Now, Mayor Blake, I know just in your neck of the woods there where City Hall is, I think of like the corner brunch place right there. Stonebridge is another one that is right in that area. They have outdoor dining that they had been, you know, Stonebridge already had it set up, but like the corner, I know, kind of makeshift created outdoor dining at the beginning of the pandemic through the summertime. And obviously, since it's been freezing and it's snowing, it's been taken down. I was curious, does the city of Milford have anything in place where, you know, hey, you can't have outdoor dining until March 1st or something? Or can they start to set their outdoor patios back up again as soon as possible, since we're starting to actually kind of see a spring preview today, actually?
Yeah, and beautiful weather like this where it's 50 degrees, we are encouraging outdoor dining al fresco. But to your question, the governor's executive order relaxed all of the local planning and zoning regulations, you know, throughout the state, and gave more flexibility for restaurants to have or host outdoor seating. Some of the parking requirements and other conditions are relaxed. And even when the executive orders end, our Planning and Zoning Board is already looking to expand, at least on a temporary basis, those outdoor dining opportunities.
All right. Talking to Mayor Ben Blake this morning in Milford. Now, Mayor Blake, certainly you are no stranger to this, but Milford has beautiful beaches, beautiful state parks, and people come from all over to go to Milford, which is great. Now, I know last summer, obviously because we were in the height of the pandemic, we were only allowing, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I can't remember which beaches did what. I know Fairfield did this, but did Milford only allow Milford residents in?
There were some pandemic protocols associated with our beaches for social distancing, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, the normal beach season is Memorial Day weekend to Labor Day weekend. You know, that's when we, you know, formally open up our beaches. But really, all year round, people can utilize the beaches. If you go down to Walnut Beach right now, you're going to see lots and lots of people, appropriately social distancing, but walking on the boardwalk, soaking in the ocean breezes.
So you guys are do you know at this point, Mayor Blake, or are you going to wait till you get closer to Memorial Day? Do you guys know if you're going to keep it as last year where it's only open to Milford residents? Is it going to open to the whole state? Are you going to let out-of-staters in? What are you thinking at this point?
My great hope is that everything returns back to normal, and we have our normal beach season where, you know, the not just the beaches, but the shops and the restaurants and everything is bustling as it should be. Obviously, I think that we're still going to have many of the protocols that we did have last summer and throughout the last year still in place to ensure safety. But I think things are going to start opening up as the weather gets warmer, and including our beaches.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I know in the Walnut Beach area, you guys usually have a farmer's market every summer as well. You guys have, you know, the bathrooms down there opens up. We just finished up, like I had anything to do with it. Silver Sands, you know, finished up their pavilion area. That got rebuilt and is absolutely beautiful just because I run past it all the time. So that all is expected to kind of be open as well.
Absolutely. You know, the bathrooms, everything should be open up very soon. Yesterday, I know that the farmers market put in their facility use permit to reserve the Walnut Beach parking lot. And I know that the other farmers markets around town will be open as well. So I'm looking forward to a great Milford summer. You know, if you're lucky enough to be in the beaches in Milford in the summer, you're lucky enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Now, I know I'm going to regret this. I should ask you this off the air, but you know what? I treat my listeners like they're my family. So when do you guys start allowing people to get their beach sticker? Because I need to go get mine.
It is already available. You just go down or request it online or call in to the tax office who distributes the stickers. You can get them anytime. You know, residents are not required to show beach stickers at the beaches for beach parking until the beach season opens up Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. But I know last year there was such a backlog, obviously, especially because of the pandemic and everything. And then you had to have it and all that. And I don't think I was allowed to park at the beach until like July. And I was really mad at myself. So I told myself this year I'd be ahead of the game. And as I'm talking to you, I'm like, are you ahead of the game, though, Melissa? Because you don't have your beach sticker. So I'm going to go do that in the commercial break. I'm going to go request it. Mayor Ben Blake, so great to talk to you. Thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing that promotional video. When is that going up?
I know that it's being filmed today, so stay tuned.
Okay.
Hey,
thank you so much. We always appreciate
talking to you.
Oh, my Lord. Melissa, come on. I'm trying to say let's head into Westport, if I could get my words out correctly, to go see my very good friend, First Selectman Jim Marpy. Jim, I had a late start this morning, and it's been throwing me off. We're having tech issues. I'm so sorry this morning. Hopefully, we have no problems here. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, Melissa, and it sounds like you're pretty good, too, on your positivity day.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So let's talk about some big things happening in Westport. First of all, planning for spring activities. And I'm so glad you bring this up because I keep calling this week, Jim, our spring preview. We're getting like a taste of spring starting today with 50 degrees. So what's cooking in Westport?
Well, you know, it's just what I was thinking about with listening to the weather forecast, that today will be mild. There's still a lot of snow on the ground, and it'll probably still be there for a few more days. But we are, as a community, beginning to think about how do we deal with spring and summer, even though we'll continue to be fighting the battle with COVID. But you know, we're a year smarter now, and how do we go about that? So, for example, today the Board of Selectmen will be meeting actually in about an hour on a request to use the Imperial parking lot off of Imperial Avenue once again for a drive-in movie theater, the Remarkable Theater, which was one of those amazing creative successes that took place last year where people listen to sit in their cars, socially distance, all the good stuff, and listen to the sound through their FM radio, but old-fashioned sort of kind of drive-in movie experience. So that's very exciting. And also the Chamber of Commerce and the Westport Library are going to be asking us for permission to use that same space for what we know around here as the Supper and Soul concerts, a couple of rock concerts in the early spring. And that's the concept there is, you buy your dinner at one of the many restaurants downtown that are they're still operating very successfully, and then come over and listen to the concert and get out. But what's even more exciting about that is they're doing that in collaboration with the Levitt Pavilion organization, which is,
as the Levitt.
Most of my listeners would know, is right next door to this parking lot. And last summer, because of just the challenges of COVID and trying to get our heads around what was going on, the Levitt remained dark. But they're anxious to be reopened this summer. No doubt it won't be as jammed in as many people are used to at the Levitt. We'll have to do the social distancing thing, but I'm excited that they're looking forward to their plans that'll start to be coming out soon. So a lot of excitement in the world of entertainment and in the world of dining. In a couple of weeks, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be considering a text amendment that will extend the outdoor dining capability until further notice, as they say, so that as I think your listeners know, outdoor dining was so popular and still is, even in the wintertime. A lot of the restaurants are still operating outside or in tented open tents. But we're trying to look ahead at how we do that. And then our parks and recreation facilities, we're planning to do everything we can to open the facilities kind of in the normal times, the longshore golf course, tennis courts, even this year the swimming pool at Longshore Park. Last year, again, it stayed closed just because of the social distancing challenges there. So we've spent a lot of time thinking about how can we reopen that, but again, maintain the social distancing that will likely have to take place at least for the foreseeable future.
And my understanding too, Jim, is that I saw something about a Barnes & Noble coming to the downtown area as well?
Yeah, that's right. Last night, I was the very first customer of our new downtown Barnes & Noble.
Oh, cool.
I had the opportunity to, a little personal aside here, I became a grandfather about 11 weeks ago for
oh
the first time.
Oh, my gosh, congratulations.
And, yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's the bright spot in this dark tunnel of COVID. Mm. But anyway, so I've been looking to buy the book, How to Raise a Reader. And so that was an opportunity to buy that. But more importantly, we now have two new bookstores in downtown Westport, Barnes & Noble. They relocated from further out east on Post Road to a somewhat smaller location where Restoration Hardware has been for many years.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But it's beautiful inside. It's bigger than I expected it to be, but yet it feels cozy at the same time. So there's that. But around the corner from there is the Westport Bookshop, which is operated by the Westport Library, and it's a used bookstore, gently used books, as they say, and opportunities to look for a book that may be out of print or just just an opportunity to browse and enjoy. Fellow book lovers as well. So downtown bookstores opening. We are about to see two gelato stores open on Main Street. Very fancy. one called Cold Fusion, which is up at the sort of the top end of Main Street where the Chase Bank is. That'll be opening. And then a new one announced this week. I'm not sure I will pronounce this correctly, but it's La Fenice or Fenici, I guess because we're talking about gelato, where the old Lucky Brand store that used to be on Main Street.
Oh, sure, and, sure.
So things happening downtown and where the Tavern on Main, that has been closed for a while, but the new leadership there, and we expect that to be open in the coming months as well. So that, along with a number of stores that are opening on Main Street. I know a few months ago you and I talked about Main Street not maybe being as exciting as it used to be, but I see the potential now of what's coming back. And the amazing thing is we had two new restaurants just recently opened in that downtown area, Capulli, on the Post Road, and Basso over on Jessup Road. Just great, great new places. And so you come down, buy a book, go get some gelato or go have a bite to eat and do some shopping. I mean, that's just what we want for downtown.
That literally sounds like a perfect day. So that sounds amazing. Jim, thank you so much for coming on and giving us some of your spring previews in Westport. Yeah. We appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure.
It's time to go beyond the classroom and check in with the Discovery Museum. It's science you may not know on WICC 600.
David Mestre, hi.
Oh, how are you?
I'm good. Were you just in touch with Mars? You had the wrong lineup. You were talking to the aliens on Mars. I'm over here. I'm the alien on Earth that you were talking to. Hi.
I know. What happened was there was an 11-minute delay, so that's what's happening. So.
Well played, my friend. Well, we are going to continue talking about, it sounds like, some other really cool out-of-this-world stuff. What's on tap for today?
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about festooning.
What is festooning? What a fun word, festooning.
That's a really good one. Yeah, so you have to say it a couple times really fast, festooning. So it turns out NASA has a very long tradition of just decorating its spacecraft and its space hardware whenever it sends it out into space. You probably remember that when we sent the Voyager spacecrafts, which are the farthest space probes we've ever sent out into space right mm-hmm. now, they're the farthest that they've gone, they carried with them a record with the sounds of Earth. And it also carried a little needle for that record as well. So.
Okay.
So we've got images that were placed on these spacecraft, and our Mars rover Perseverance is no different. It has been festooned to the hilt. So we've got all sorts of really cool things, Easter eggs, hidden Mickeys. They're all
what? Y'all have hidden Mickeys?
Yes, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Awesome.
They're the NASA version of hidden Mickeys. So they're really kind of cool. So one of the things that is probably one of the best at festooning and hiding their festooning is the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. They're the ones that actually build these rovers and the equipment to send all these to Mars. So they're really, really good at it. So one of the ones that couple of them that stand out actually is on the previous rover, Curiosity. Curiosity had these round wheels. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems that we had before in earlier rovers is that with our wheels, they would get caked with Mars dust.
Oh.
And so they redesigned them with little holes so that the Mars dust can just fly out as the wheels are turning. So that way it doesn't cake the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
But Jet Propulsion Laboratory didn't tell anybody they did this. They arranged the holes in the wheels in such a way that as the wheels roll, they leave these little imprints behind.
Oh my gosh, how cool.
In Morse code and spells out the letters JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, every time they rolled those wheels and left an imprint on Mars. So they're basically leaving their mark all over the Martian surface with their little JPLs in Morse code.
I feel like NASA should do something like that for people's shoes. Like every time you walk, it leaves DM, and it's like, oh, there goes David Mestre. He was here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's right. Little NASA. That's right. It's cool.
That would be so cool.
And then also on the new Mars rover, Perseverance, they've added a couple of really cool things. So have you ever seen those little window stickers where it's like a little family window sticker? Like
yes. Parent, oh, of course. Parent, I always wanted one, and then I never got one. So, yeah, I think those are cute.
Well, it turns out that Perseverance has one of these stickers. It's got a little family sticker of all of the rovers that have ever been on Mars, with Perseverance, with Curiosity, with Opportunity, with Spirit, and with the littlest of the rovers that was sent to Mars, the first rover sent to Mars, Sojourner. And flying around the family is a little helicopter, Ingenuity.
Of course. That's so cute.
So it's a really cute little sticker. But the one that really blew everybody's mind was what Jet Propulsion Laboratory did with their parachute. Now, this is great. So we would never have been able to know what happened during the entry, descent, and landing had it not been for the engineers basically putting all these cameras all over the place and recording those 7 minutes of the entry, descent, and landing.
Mm-hmm.
This had never been done before. So if you go online, you can actually find images and movies of the entry, descent, and landing, the parachute deployment, the heat shield flying down and landing on the ground, the actual sky crane maneuver where they landed the rover right on the surface. But in the parachute, what was really kind of wild was when the parachute deployed, it was made of about 320 different panels, cloth panels, and they had all these really weird arrangement of oranges and reds and whites, kind of like that. So there's like it was either orange or white, or it's hard to tell my eyes, it was either red or white. But there are these contrasting panels, and they looked like it was completely random. And people were looking at these panels for a while, and on the internet, engineers and amateurs and scientists got together, and they knew that JPL must have done something.
Wow.
That this is not random.
Mm-hmm.
This is not random. And so what they did was that they looked at the panels and they discovered that there was a pattern to the panels. And when they were able to figure out the pattern, they discovered that what Jet Propulsion Laboratory had done with their parachute was they put a coded message in the parachute panels.
Oh, my gosh. These guys are so sneaky. What does it say? What's the message?
I know. What's the message? What did the Jet Propulsion Laboratory engineers tell us, the crew that made that parachute? And so what it did is that the code is actually in binary. And if you know, binary is a series of zeros and ones. And so the zeros were the white panels, and the ones were the colored panels, the orange or dark orange or reddish panels.
Mm-hmm.
And they were grouped into little segments. And if you took those segments, figured out what the number was that it was trying to represent in binary, they actually were a letter, the 17th letter, the 13th letter, the 8th letter of the alphabet. And when you deciphered it, it turned into a message. And the message was the motto of Jet Propulsion Laboratory: Dare Mighty Things.
It's pretty fitting.
Yeah,
it's pretty fitting.
And then on the outer rim of the parachute were letters and numbers, and it's the latitude and longitude back on Earth of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California.
That is, you know, this makes me kind of just think, David, if we were to ever send aircraft, like what would be people's little touches, almost like a time capsule? Like what would be your little touches on your that? This is so cool. I didn't even know that there was this much detail that went into it, but this is so neat. Like my mind's in a million different places. Like what would I put on the, you know, on the aircraft that I send somewhere?
And I think the big thing is that, you know, the reason why we do so many of these things is because, you know, we're thinking about a future where maybe somebody, somebody out there that hasn't even been born yet or is in fifth grade now or whatever, is going to be in a spacesuit and she's going to be walking on the surface of Mars, and she's going to walk right up to this rover. And as she looks at this rover, maybe 10 years from now, 30 years from now, 50 years from now, maybe even 100 years from now, we might have forgotten all this festooning. But as she ponders this rover in front of her, of the exploration that has been done before, it'll have these messages coded for her or that astronaut that's there to be able to really contemplate what it took to get that astronaut to that surface. So we've got all these wonderful messages, you know, and so imagine like that somebody might have forgotten what was in the parachute, but somebody will pick up that parachute someday. We think.
Right.
And if they do, they'll look at it and go, whoa, this is kind of weird. This is like, oh, this ain't random.
Exactly.
And if they can decipher it, it'll just hit them. Oh, my gosh. Dear
That's amazing.
Mighty things.
Wow.
Pretty deep.
That is so cool. I love that. Wow. I don't even know what to say.
I want to get a sticker too. I got to put a little sticker.
I was just gonna say now that they have to sell those stickers. You know they have to do that now. Oh, they have to. They totally have to. I put it on my car. That's so cool.
Yeah, there's
so cool. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on. Always such a pleasure to talk to you, and we will talk again next week.